President-elect Trump acknowledges for the first time in his Wednesday news conference that he believes Russian operatives hacked the Democratic Party during the election. But in his 58 minutes with reporters, he continued to refute intelligence reports that Moscow acted to help him win. Good morning. It's the Joy Cardine Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, in for Joy. We're discussing what we learned from the news conference with our guest, Susan Johnson. She's an associate professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater and the director of the university's Center for Political Science and Public Policy Research. Susan, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, leading up to this presser Tuesday night, unconfirmed reports surfaced that Russia had compromising, embarrassing information on the president-elect, which he flat out denied, first on Twitter, then yesterday during his news conference. Let's take a listen.
It's all fake news. It's phony stuff. It didn't happen. And it was gotten by opponents of ours, as you know, because you reported it and so did many of the other people. It was a group of opponents that got together, sick people, and they put that crap together.
No media outlet has been able to verify these reports, this dossier, so far. From your political science perspective, how much damage could these claims do to the Trump administration just days before taking power?
You know, normally I would say that this has the potential to cause great damage, but we've just been through a campaign where we've heard many things that people have argued have been troubling and potentially unstabling for the administration, or in that case, his campaign, and it didn't happen. So he was very forceful, as you just played, in saying that these are unsubstantiated. The media has done him a favor, I would say, in the sense that it's getting a lot of attention from some places. I mean, BuzzFeed was the organization that originally posted a lot of information. CNN took a lot of heat from him and others for covering it a bit. But other news organizations like NPR, the New York Times, have been very clear that it's unsubstantiated. And so, and not talking a lot about the specifics of the claims. And so I think that this might end up just getting, you know, moved aside like so many other things have.
And perhaps deflect attention from confirmation hearings?
Potentially. And the timing of this information being released is interesting. And throughout the campaign, we saw at different times things came up in opportune times, in fact, for Donald Trump. In this case, it came on the eve of the press conference, as you mentioned, and it definitely shifted the focus of the press conference away, I would say, from the confirmation process a bit and from other issues, and a lot of time was spent on that topic. And perhaps that was a positive thing in the sense that it didn't focus more closely on policy or nominees and things like that.
So what did you walk away with here from this press conference? What did you learn?
Well, I think it's going to be an interesting 4 years or eight of watching Donald Trump interact with the media. It was interesting to me. I wasn't able to watch it live because I was working, but I listened to it later, and just the tone was so different. The shouting out of the questions, we've gotten used to presidential press conferences where it's predetermined, frankly, who's going to be able to ask the questions. And what we had instead here were different reporters from different news agencies shouting out their questions, trying to get the president-elect's attention. So that was something that I think was different, and I think that's probably something he's going to keep going with. And then I just think in terms of the way that he speaks and conveys information, it's in a way, it's much more general than I think we're used to with other presidential press conferences. And it has a tone that's very, let's call it Trumpian, in the sense that it's I would say very boastful and short on details.
Okay. And Trump was asked about Russia's meddling in our presidential election. And again, Trump had long been skeptical of the country's role, despite the high level of confidence from the intelligence community. But after he was briefed about the hacking last week, he had a different response yesterday. Let's listen.
As far as hacking, I think it was Russia, but I think we also get hacked by other countries and other people. And I can say that, you know, when we lost 22 million names and everything else that was hacked recently, they didn't make a big deal out of that. That was something that was extraordinary. That was probably China.
What do you make about his point here? Lots was made of the Russian hack, but not so much when we're hacked other times.
Well, I think that in this instance, the issue is so significant in the sense that there's a foreign government that our multiple intelligence agencies have shown to have attempted to interfere in our presidential election. And I think the rub for Donald Trump isn't so much the hacking, but the assumption that somehow the hacking was intentional to help him, and even more so that the hacking actually did help him. That's where I think he and his supporters feel the strongest and want to push back on the most, this idea that somehow he would not have won had it not been for the Russians.
Well, let's set the scene here. 10 American flags in front of a blue curtain set up in the lobby of Trump Tower in Midtown Manhattan. We heard estimates of 250 journalists crammed into this lobby, the press conference ending a period of 167 days since he was last fielding questions from the full media complement. We're exploring what was said, what reporters were called on, what media organizations were called out with our guest political scientist Susan Johnson of University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. And now let's hear your voice, what you have to say about this press conference. What information stood out to you? How concerned are you about this relationship with the media? Let's discuss. 800-642-1234 or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Susan, let's go now to this news conference supposedly having to happen in December. We were, we even had fingers crossed this week it was going to happen this week. And the focus would be to handle potential conflicts of interest regarding his company. But the president-elect postponed it until yesterday and made it a more general event. But he did announce that while he would step away from the Trump Organization while serving as president, he would not be completely gone.
My two sons, who are right here, Don and Eric, are going to be running the company. They are going to be running it in a very professional manner. They're not going to discuss it with me. Again, I don't have to do this.
So Trump will not relinquish ownership and says the Constitution doesn't force him to take any action, but he wants to put forward a clean image. Is he doing that with this plan?
Interestingly, right shortly after the press conference, actually in the afternoon, the head of the government's ethics office came out and indicated that really all the things that Trump talked about doing aren't enough. And that's pretty unprecedented. We've seen Walter Schaub is his name, and he's the director of the Office of Government Ethics. And we've seen him speak out over the course of this presidential transition period, somewhat surprisingly. But even yesterday, he came out and said that this really isn't enough. So whereas in the press conference, Donald Trump and his attorney went to great lengths to talk about how he was doing more than was required, the ethics experts, when you read them, and not just this particular one from the Office of Government Ethics, but others, have indicated that it really isn't enough. And Donald Trump kept speaking about putting his business in a trust. And oftentimes we hear about a blind trust, mm-hmm. and this idea, and a blind trust is very, very different. I read this morning someone who said that the only similarities are the word trust. And so a blind trust, it means that you have no knowledge of what's going on with your businesses, your finances, or anything. To put it in a trust is simply, he's simply handing over the authority to his sons, but there's no expectation that he's not going to know what's going on. And so it's a very, very important distinction that people need to understand when you hear that word trust.
How big of an issue do you think his continued ownership of the Trump Organization is going to be throughout his presidency?
You know, when he was first questioned about this after being elected president. His response was, people voted for me even though they knew that I had this big business. And so I don't know that it's going to be that big of a deal for people who were his supporters.
We're talking with Susan Johnson, Associate Professor of Political Science at University of Wisconsin-Whitewater, talking about the press conference yesterday, incoming President Donald Trump. How did you feel about this press conference? What were your takeaways? Any concerns you had about what you heard? 800-642-1234 or post on the Joy Cardin Show Facebook page. News headlines are just ahead. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Stay with us. The president-elect sparred with reporters, criticized American intelligence officials, and denounced fake news in a fiery press conference that lasted just shy of an hour yesterday at Trump Tower in Midtown Manhattan. I'm Kate Archer Kent, in for the Joy Cardin Show. We're exploring takeaways this hour with our guest, Susan Johnson. She's an associate professor of political science at University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. And we want to hear what from the news conference resonated with you. What insights did you glean? How has your opinion of the media changed after these unconfirmed reports of Trump's Russian ties? How are you feeling about Trump is handling Obamacare? Add your voice to this conversation at 800-642-1234 or post on the Joy Cardin Show Facebook page. Let's go to the phones right away with John from Rib Lake. Hi, John.
Good morning. The takeaway that I get from the press conference, first off, I think that it is noteworthy the length of time between conferences back from in July till now. I think shows a total lack of respect on the part of President-elect Trump for the media and also for the American people. And I think that his tone, his tenor to the whole thing shows his encouragement of divisiveness between Americans, specifically the Affordable Care Act and his disdain, seemingly, for President Obama, I think it's promoting an ongoing racial conflict.
Well, a lot to unpack there, Susan.
I would say that I agree in the sense of the press conference and it not, the length of time between the press conferences. Normally, a president-elect holds a press conference shortly after the election, so a week to 10 days or so, to meet with the press to answer questions about the election, but also to answer questions about the transition process and speak to the country, frankly, as well, in a way to, you know, set the tone for what's going to happen over the course of the next few months before the inauguration. We didn't have that happen this time. And as you indicated, instead, you said earlier that there was supposed to be this press conference that was going to be held in December, and then that was canceled.
Mm-hmm.
Even the December one would have been late. But frankly, waiting until 10 days before the inauguration is quite late in the process.
Well, we have a lot of activity here on Facebook. Gary writes to us, besides exposing the media, he also exposed problems in our intelligence agencies who leaked his meeting with them when no one else was notified. In essence, Gary says he outsmarted them and will now be seeing changes that should improve our security. The more he's attacked, the stronger he gets, and his enemies continue to fall apart and break down emotionally as well as effectively. How do you respond to Gary?
That's interesting. I know exactly what Gary's talking about. During the press conference, there was a question, or he was addressing the idea of the leaks and where did this information come from in terms of when he was meeting with intelligence and then also some of the information that came out of those hearings. And he said that he did a test or something where he didn't tell any of his people that he was having this meeting, and then it leaked out anyway. And he was at that point trying to point out that there was a weakness in the intelligence community, and he's done that consistently now in regard to his criticisms of the intelligence community in regard to the hacks and things like that. I don't know to what extent it's going to impact trust in the intelligence community's big picture. I think so much of it gets caught up in the partisan nature of our politics now that it's sometimes hard to even separate those things out.
More of a tit for tat.
Right.
Let's go to Bernie in Elkhorn. Hi, Bernie.
Hi, good morning. I'm not a fan of Donald Trump, but I don't believe any of this nonsense about the Russian hacks or the personal control over Trump that Russia has. I'd invite you to check out Glenn Greenwald, impeccable investigative journalist, one of the founders of The Intercept, Counterpunch, many of the learned voices there, or Paul Craig Roberts, if your inclination is from the right. It bothers me tremendously that these tales of Russian hacking, which are completely unsubstantiated in any real facts, are being repeated endlessly in the media, and none of the other voices that challenge these things on factual analysis are being heard. And Russia has been encroached upon by NATO for some time now, and the people that run this country are very interested in dominating Russia economically and surrounding it militarily. This is part of anti-Russian propaganda, and while I'm no fan of Donald Trump, this is one of the few silver linings I saw in him, that he might be willing to push back on the aggression toward Russia. And I find this very frightening that this nonsense and propaganda from the CIA is being repeated as if it were fact.
Susan, echo chamber going on with this Russian hacking.
Well, I think that the intelligence communities have come out and said that this is the case. And I suppose whether you believe that or not is, I mean, I don't know what to say, because if a person doesn't believe the intelligence communities, then there's nothing that we can do to, I would say, convince someone. But also, I guess I go back to my prior comment about the partisan nature. Now, this caller said that he wasn't a Trump supporter, but the partisan nature of just where we are and support. There's been polling done thinking about Russia specifically, where Republicans generally had looked quite unfavorably on Russia leading up to the election, and perhaps even before so. And then now in post-election polls, Republicans are feeling much more positive about Russia than they had before. So there's so much partisanship that's driving a lot of this.
Well, let's transition to the Affordable Care Act. Mr. Trump basically said to get ready to see it go and have a replacement installed almost simultaneously.
Obamacare is the Democrats' problem. We are going to take the problem off the shelves for them. We're doing them a tremendous service by doing it. We could sit back and let them hang with it. We are doing the Democrats a great service.
So Trump said that 2017 would be catastrophic because of the Affordable Care Act. Do you expect to see Democrats to be relieved that Trump is stepping in to rescue and fix the Obamacare?
I've not heard many Democrats express excitement by what is being proposed by Donald Trump or the Republicans. So the Democrats have been quite vocal in their concerns about repealing Obamacare. I'm really genuinely curious what's going to happen in regard to this idea of repeal and replace. And last night, the Senate took its first major step toward repealing the Affordable Care Act through approving its budget blueprint that will allow it to use reconciliation to repeal it down the road, but very quickly. And originally, this was going to be done with this idea that it would be repealed very quickly, and then there would be work on replacing it down the road and perhaps not implement the repeal for a few years. Some said 2 years, some said as many as 4 years. But Donald Trump has been quite aggressive, and he was yesterday in the press conference as well, that he wants it to be repealed and then replaced immediately. I don't know how that's going to happen. I just think about major legislation like this and the time that it takes to the negotiations and the just the work that's involved. I don't know how he was mentioning in the press conference that somehow simultaneously there would be a replacement law. Now, I mean, maybe there will be, but I don't know how that happens in a meaningful, deliberative way.
We're talking with Susan Johnson. She's a political scientist from the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater, talking about the press conference yesterday, incoming President Donald Trump fielding questions from an estimated 250 journalists who were crammed into the lobby at Trump Tower in Manhattan. They were pelting questions left and right at the incoming president, trying to get an edgewise and to a press conference that was a long time in coming, months in coming, for the entire press corps to be able to ask questions. How do you feel about what you heard in the press conference? 800-642-1234, or post your comments on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. How do you feel about what you saw and heard? What did you glean from the news conference? And Susan, let's turn now to the wall. We heard so much about the wall and building the wall during on the campaign trail. And take a listen here. Well, actually, we don't. I don't think we have a clip here on the wall. But how did you see and hear the incoming president approach building a wall with Mexico?
Well, he chastised the reporter for asking the question because he referred to it as a fence. So that was the first thing. He said it's not a fence, it's a wall. And there's been some talk over the course of the past 2 weeks in regard to who's going to pay for it. And he pointed this out during the press conference yesterday, and he reminded people that during the campaign he had this question and response at his rallies where he would ask who was going to pay for the wall, and the people who were there would reply, Mexico. And he said, that's what I said, and that's what's going to happen. However, what also happened over the past few weeks was an indication that he was going to be asking Congress for appropriations to pay for the wall. So he needed to explain that. And the way he explained it was that he wants to get the wall going immediately. And rather than spend a year or a year and a half negotiating with Mexico about the payment for the wall, that the U.S. was going to move forward on building of the wall, and then the payment would come at a later date. And then he also said, and this is to me is very important, he also said that this might not be a payment. You know, it may be in the form of something else. So during the campaign, he was quite clear that in his mind, Mexico was going to be writing a check for the payment of this wall. And now he's speaking very differently in the sense of who's going to pay for it, and then still saying Mexico's going to pay for it, but the way that they're going to pay for it makes it sound more like it's not a payment per se, where they would write a check, but perhaps through some deal, negotiation, that's not a direct payment.
Well, let's take a moment here and listen to that moment in the press conference.
Mike Pence is leading an effort to get final approvals through various agencies and through Congress for the wall to begin. I don't feel like waiting a year or a year and a half. We're going to start building. Mexico, in some form, and there are many different forms, will reimburse us, and they will reimburse us for the cost of the wall. That will happen, whether it's a tax or whether it's a payment, probably less likely that it's a payment, but it will happen.
It seems like a lot is up in the air then?
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know what he means by maybe it'll be a tax. I mean, we don't tax foreign governments. So I'm not really clear what he means when he says that. And that's why I'm sort of not sure what words to choose when you're asking this question, because I'm not sure what exactly he means if it's not going to be a payment, what it would be.
Well, let's go to some more thoughts here coming from Facebook. Steve writes to us, it wasn't a news conference. It was a diatribe against the media. He even had his staffers in the audience to yell support and boo the media. Steve says this is shocking behavior for any politician and a disgrace for an incoming president. Susan?
You know, the applause, that was really interesting to me, too, because as I mentioned earlier in the show, I wasn't watching it. I listened to it. And I was very confused when I started to hear applause, and I was wondering who was applauding. And apparently, I wasn't the only one who was confused. There was some uproar, apparently, on social media, people thinking that it was the press corps who was applauding him. And it turned out that he had invited, as you said, staffers and other supporters to attend. And it created a very different environment. And from what I understand, these people were, because the room was so packed, they were sort of mixed in with the media. And so it wasn't even clear necessarily who the press was and who the supporters were. And it was just an environment that we're not familiar with when we think about presidential press conferences.
Well, he was also asked about when he would announce his nominee for Supreme Court Justice. President-elect Trump said maybe a couple weeks into his presidency. How surprised are you that he hasn't put forward somebody already, or is this just all a wait and see?
I'm not surprised that he hasn't indicated that name of the nominee yet. He released a list of 20 people back during the campaign, and apparently there's been some interviews going on, but we've been without a Supreme Court justice now since February, when Justice Scalia passed away, and that's a very long time. But right now he's trying to make decisions about filling his cabinet and the like, and so I'm not terribly surprised that he's suggesting that he'll be making an appointment within a few weeks after taking office.
Another comment here, it's important to listen carefully to what Trump and the government ethics guy really said. Trump referenced his action about giving up control of his companies relative to the law of what he is required to do. Government ethics fellow, this person writes on Facebook, referenced his actions to the standard of other recent presidents. How did not compare it to the law and what he was required to do? So ethics, of course, being such a big part of what's going on here as Trump takes office.
And he tried to make a really clear point yesterday that he was doing more than was required and talking about the conflict of interest. And I've heard people compare Trump's financial situation to other current presidents. And I've heard ethics experts talk about it as well. And it's very difficult just given the nature of his holdings versus other people who have come into office. And so it's hard to make those one-on-one comparisons from what I understand. But I've heard comparisons to other people who have come in who have been quite wealthy, who have been, not for president, but cabinet appointments, who have been required to divest completely. And it's a major exercise, and oftentimes they're giving up a lot of personal wealth to take these government positions. So I think that, like I said, to go back to what I said earlier, I think that he made it clear that to his supporters, he said that he was a businessman and he's doing everything and going above and beyond what, in his mind, what's required of him to not have any conflicts of interest. I think people are skeptical, and I think they're rightly skeptical.
Well, and his lawyer said, you know, selling off his interests and divesting of the Trump brand, you can't do that. How would you respond quickly here?
Well, I mean, I think that there's some truth to that, but I think I've also heard people say being a president is very important and you should have thought of that perhaps, and also maybe you should make that sacrifice.
We're discussing key moments in President-elect Trump's press conference Wednesday, pushback on Russia, turning over of business assets, Affordable Care Act, repeal and replace, cabinet picks in the Supreme Court. What stuck out to you? What do you care about? We're rounding up the news, the takeaways, 800-642-1234 or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Susan Johnson is staying with us. She's an associate professor of political science at UW Whitewater. We're back after this news from NPR here on the Ideas Network. It lived up to its billing as a noisy grilling of questions flying out of reporters' mouths trying to get a word in edgewise. CNN getting basically a timeout. We're combing through the 58-minute presser this hour with our guest, Susan Johnson. She's a political scientist from UW-Whitewater. And we want to get your takeaway. What did you learn from President-elect Trump's news conference? Did it cover the items that you most were concerned about? Did it hit home for you, and in what way? Join in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let's go to Scott now in Jefferson. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. First, I want to give a shout-out to the UW-Whitewater Political Science Program for producing in a positive way for producing the incoming White House chief of staff. So kudos to them. Second thing is that I just want to correct Susan on one other point. During the campaign, Donald Trump referenced—he didn't reference it loudly or vocally, but he did reference it a few times—that his plan for getting reimbursement for the wall was to look at the wire transfers that families of immigrant workers who are working here in the United States send back to Mexico is to confiscate or tax that money in one way, shape, or form during the wire transfer process.
Susan?
I appreciate the correction. I was not aware of that. And we're also very proud that the incoming chief of staff to the president is a UW-Whitewater grad, as well as several people in the Wisconsin state legislature. So our grads have done quite well.
Well, let's go to Lori now in St. Francis. Hi, Lori.
Good morning. I'm an 84-year-old woman, and I've been very politically involved, and I could not believe what happened yesterday. I'm not a Republican, but I think we needed to give this man a chance. And this was simply a circus barker. He said he could run his business, he could run the country, but he's choosing not to run his business just to be fair. Give me a break. This man is not a presidential person. I'm sorry to say that. It just hurts a lot.
Susan, respond to Lori here about giving someone a chance, giving an incoming president a chance.
Well, I think that there is that expectation. Remember, when you have an election and someone wins, there's a group of people who are very disappointed that their candidate didn't win. I think this became even more the case because we had that disconnect between the popular vote and the Electoral College vote. But make no mistake, the way we elect presidents is through the Electoral College vote. So in that regard, Donald Trump was fairly elected president. And I think that most people do want to give the incoming president, even if they didn't vote for him, the benefit of the doubt, and they want the country to succeed. And President Obama made that point very early on after the election, and he said, I know that a lot of Democrats are very disappointed, but we need to remember that we have to focus on the good of the country and moving the country forward, and we don't want a president to fail because that hurts the country.
Well, thank you so much, Lori, for your call. You can call in at 800-642-1234. You can post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let's go to Scott now in Green Bay. Hi, Scott.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I'm not a Democrat or a Republican Party supporter. It was interesting yesterday when the lawyer person was on talking about the Constitution reference to gifts from foreign governments. I think that basically Trump should get rid of all of his, sell off all his companies because any government allowing you to operate your corporation in their country is a gift, because operating with limited liability, even in this country, is a gift from the community, because you don't get to operate with limited liability as just for the sake of doing that. That's not a force of nature. It's basically a gift, and think you should get rid of all those companies.
Susan, you touched on this earlier, but divesting and the importance of that?
Well, and he clearly said that he wasn't divesting. And this is an issue that's up for debate. There are some people who feel very, very strongly that he must divest. And there are others, his attorneys, who have argued that what he's doing is above and beyond what's required. Unless there's legal challenges, and I don't know in what form those would come, to this, it's an issue that people are going to have to, I guess, agree to disagree, as you know, simplistic as that sounds.
And on Facebook, Greg writes to us and says, I still want to see Mr. Trump's tax returns. However, we learned in the news conference, President-elect Trump said it's only reporters who want to see these tax returns. What could we learn, Susan, from seeing these tax returns?
Well, according to Donald Trump, he said you learn very little from tax returns. But, you know, tax experts or experts say that there's a lot of things. I mean, you can look at conflicts of interest. You can look where you're, you know, where you're making your money from. It can talk about your charitable giving habits. It'll tell you what your tax rate is. And polls have shown that, contrary to what Donald Trump said, a majority of Americans have said that he should release his tax returns. And he's made the case that he hasn't because he's under audit. But there have been people in the past who have been under audit who have released the returns, and the IRS has indicated that there's no reason why someone under audit could not release their tax returns. So this is a considerable point of contention.
Let's go to Jim in Sockville now. Hi, Jim.
Hey, good morning.
What would you like to add?
By the conversation so far, I'm right on board with. I agree. The part about the conference, the news conference, that probably most troubled me, and this might be just a matter of degrees of troubling, was when he tried to, well, he did shut down the CNN reporter. And so he's starting a pattern on his first press conference of trying to shut down or edit or control the free press. I find that incredibly troubling.
Susan?
I think that a lot of people found that exchange to be troubling. And the back and forth, the shouting or the loud voice back and forth, and then Donald Trump, you know, responding with the, you know, you're just fake news, and shutting down the reporter. So I think that's not what we're used to. And we're used to this idea that the press is to be the watchdog of government. And I think that's something that's been lost over the course of the past several decades, this idea and understanding by the public that it's the press's responsibility to hold government accountable for its actions. And so we have situations now where when legitimate news organizations ask pointed questions, that people assume right away that they're attacking someone. I mean, in the case of CNN, he was trying to lump them together with BuzzFeed in this release of those salacious rumors, and CNN handled it in a much different way than BuzzFeed did. And if the tenor of the press conference was to allow people to shout out their questions, then Mr. Acosta from CNN had every right to try to get his question answered.
Well, Jim, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Todd now in Green Bay. Hi, Todd.
Good morning. Yeah, a lot of things there that John just popped up. Number one, CNN had already had a question asked, and the reporter was extremely rude. I was happy to see Mr. Trump shut him down. Also, they did report things as BuzzFeed did. They pretty well released and followed the BuzzFeed lead and released things. But anyway, the other thing, you know, in the Obama administration, he simply would have had the IRS audit that reporter like he had done to James Rosen of Fox News. But anyway, the other thing I was wondering about was the government ethics rules, and it's sad, but government and ethics together almost is like an oxymoron these days. But anyway, I was wondering if your guest could offer some clarification on whether or not the divestiture rules that seem to apply to other government position, people that hold positions in government, do or do not apply to the president and the vice president. Trump made that made a statement yesterday that they did not apply, not all of the rules applied to him or to Vice President Pence. And I wonder if your guests can clarify what, whether or not that is the case.
And Susan?
No, the caller's correct. When Donald Trump did say that he was not required by law to divest, he and Vice President-elect Pence, that is true. The law is very specific in excluding the vice president and the president from those divestiture rules, the idea being that it would be almost impossible to identify conflicts because there would be so many. So that he was accurate there. I think that what some people, ethics people, are arguing is that he should, because many others are required to do so, should take the lead and do so even though he's not required to. And that has to do with the divestiture part, not some of the other issues with the emoluments clause in the Constitution and the foreign government payments and things like that.
Really quickly here, almost out of time, should we expect more of these kind of press conferences, or do you think most of communication with the public and media will come via Twitter?
I think we're going to see a lot more on Twitter and a lot fewer press conferences.
Thank you so much for your time, Susan. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
That was Susan Johnson. She is an associate professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater and the director of the university's Center for Political Science and Public Policy Research. Thanks to producers Bill Martins, Naija Ellison, and Brianne Chasseau. Thanks to technical director Michelle Good. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, sitting in for Joy Cardine. Coming up tomorrow at this time, it's the Week in Review, the developments from inside the Beltway, with our guests, Congressman Ron Kind joins us and former Congressman Tom Petri. Hope you can join us here on the Ideas Network. Stay with us.